We're bringing you a must-hear conversation with Sarah Ryan, a powerful grief poet that we interviewed on our Griefy Girls book club. This episode was too good not to share on the Two Girls with Grief podcast feed.
Also, a quick update, Griefy Girls book club now has its own channel. New episodes drop every Thursday on all streaming platforms, with video episodes premiering Fridays on YouTube. Don't miss out on all our book club episodes.
In the thick of grief, what brings you comfort? For poet and author Sarah Ryan, that comfort came through words. Having experienced the profound loss of her mother and niece, Sarah found an outlet for her grief through words, while she also navigated love, motherhood, and life's ever-changing seasons.
Her raw and heartfelt reflections have resonated with grievers around the world, offering community, connection, and understanding in life's most difficult moments. In this episode, we sit down with Sarah to explore her journey through loss, healing, and the power of poetry. Join us as we learn how she became the grief poet we know today. Welcome, welcome. We're so excited. We have Sarah Ryan today on our podcast. She's a writer and therapist. You've probably seen some of her poetry. I feel like I see a lot of people repost her poetry everywhere. Even when I wasn't familiar with your account, I realized that I actually had been reading a lot of your poetry before we actually started talking about you. It's everywhere.
No pressure.
Actually, I wanted to bring up, before we get into it, in our last grief support meeting, we were going off these deck cards from another guest we had on our grief podcast, which is Carm. She's the founder of Girls Gotta Heal. She has this amazing grief deck. And one of the questions was like, who is someone that you idolize? Or Kendall, do you remember the question exactly?
Yeah, like what kind of person or influencer or character helped you work through your grief? And you came up quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, stop.
Like that three of so people so are like, sweet. Follow her poetry. It was so helpful. I really needed to hear that.
Yeah,
that we're is like, so oh, sweet.
We're having her on next week. And it felt almost like kismet moment because everyone was like, oh, she's someone that I follow and it's really helped me. And so it was just nice to like, oh, we're going to have her on. We're going to talk to her. So
we get to talk. Yeah.
So I wanted to bring that up because I just thought that was a really sweet moment that you're helping a lot of people.
And gosh, it warms my heart. It doesn't feel real. Obviously, I'm like trying to leave imposter syndrome at the door with everything I do right now. That's like my thing for 2025.
Us too.
Yes, good. Because we women, we need to step into it entirely and leave all that at the door, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, hearing that, I'm like, okay, yes, you're helping people, period, right? You don't have to downplay it. You don't have to say like, oh my gosh, I don't deserve to be there. It's just like, we're doing things just like this podcast, and it helps people, and we don't have to like justify that, and we don't have to downplay it. It's just like it helps people, and grieving people need all the support they can get, and there's never too much of it. So I love that. Thank you for sharing that with me. That warms my heart.
Yes, I know. It's like talking to a celebrity for us because you're so influential in the grief community, especially online. And when you read your poetry, it's obviously that you've experienced a great amount of grief. Like it is so personal and it's so, you touch on these nuances of grief and the feelings behind it. So obviously you have lost somebody to be able to write this well about grief and through such a beautiful lens. So do you mind sharing a little bit about who you lost and a little bit about your grief journey?
I do not mind at all. I think this is part of it, right? Is creating some space for that personal side. I don't want to just be a profile, right? I don't want to just be like some page. And I know I talk about grief with like these like broad strokes, and it may not be very specific kinds of loss that I write about, but obviously my loss is specific. So I do not mind sharing. So I started writing this poetry when I lost my mom to suicide in 2018. So she died in July of that year. Before that, I had only experienced, you know, just like other kinds of loss. I had lost my grandma 2 years previous. That definitely knocked me down pretty good. But I wouldn't say it was traumatic, right? It was very hard. And I grieved very, very hard. But losing my mom, obviously suicide loss brought a level of trauma that, you know, going through the trauma part and how much that affected my nervous system, along with living in a world without her. right? So those were like two different things, getting hit with both in one evening, right? So I was, you know, I was the last person to speak to her. Just moments after getting off the phone, you know, I got a call from my little sister that she was gone. I was on a plane heading back from Boston, trying to get back to Detroit, was planning on going to see her. So it was just like bad timing. Of course, there's never a good time to lose someone to suicide, but especially like I'm sitting here finding out next to like a plane full of strangers. It was just like, it was so much. And obviously this is, it'll be, you know, 7 years this summer and I still am working through it. Just so I'm like, I hope no one thinks I'm like ever trying to claim I'm healed or I'm good to go. Like you will not see me trying to be like a grief coach and let me give you 10 tips how to get through this. Like, no. I'm in my own therapy. As a therapist, and I still do all the stuff, right? Because that's going to be lifelong. But that loss, losing her in that way is what really started the writing journey. Since then, so not last summer, I think it would have been, I don't know what year it is, 2025. So the summer previous, like my baby sister lost her baby girl. So that introduced a different kind of grief to us that, we were sitting here talking so much about parent loss. We really hadn't even, you know, we couldn't ever prepare for child loss in any way. So I was obviously the aunt, which is very different than the mama and the dad who lost that baby. But yeah, it just, that's a different loss that you'll sometimes see me writing about. If you see me writing about child loss or, you know, something where you can kind of tell, or I wrote a poem about the wave of light that's in October and lighting a candle for all the pregnancy loss and infant loss and child loss that was written for her. So that one's in there, but obviously usually about my mom. And then obviously like broad grief, I just found that grievers just need so much support and so much advocacy that I'm writing about my mom, but I'm also writing for other grievers, to other grievers, to society about grief. You know, we need a lot of education. We are very death phobic. We always say we're very grief illiterate. So a lot of times I'm writing to like the greater society and culture. Sometimes that can be kind of angry. Sometimes I'm a little frustrated and that can come off in my poetry. You can tell I'm very much like, kind of sound snippy, like, okay, if you think it's hard to like hear about grief, imagine living it, right?
Yeah.
So that's the journey. 7 years of starting out writing very specific about suicide loss and the trauma and it being like super intense to like much more broad now and much more like advocacy, support, a lot of like awareness work. That's 7 years and hopefully like many, many more until I don't know if it, like that well will run dry and I won't have anything else to say. But so far I just keep writing. It keeps coming. So
it's always inspiration. I feel like with grief, it can hit you in different ways.
Always.
Yeah. Even for me and talking to Kendall, I feel like she'll bring up something that I'm like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. And it kind of either brings up a memory or makes you process something. And so like having those conversations, I feel like you can never really run out of grief because of that.
Really. I'm like, I know the grief will be forever. Obviously, I don't know what the writing will be like. I don't know, you know, I don't know. One day maybe I'll be done or maybe it'll slow down. You know, I've taken a break before, I think, in between like having my first daughter and a little, or maybe before that, I took a little bit of a break. I remember just saying like, I probably would never publish another book. I think I'm done. I don't have anything else to say. And then I think we're at 4 books later, 3 books later. I was wrong, but like, I don't know, but the grief will always be there. I just don't know if I'll always be writing about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So before I move on to our next point, I had a quick segue from something you said. What are your thoughts on grief coaches as a therapist and someone that writes about grief? Like, what are your thoughts about that? Because I agree that you're never healed from grief, but I do think that people can get into a better place with their grief. But I even when I see that, like, I support any people that are trying to help other grievers, but I also just, like, I don't know how to feel about that. I just feel like it can also get tricky.
Yeah, I think so. Like wearing the therapist hat a little bit here, I think that that's how it can be with any kind of like professional, right? In like the healing realm, right? I think anyone can do it poorly and unethically, and then other people can do it really well. And that goes for therapists, coaches, doctors, right, guides. I mean, you see all these things. Obviously, like, my world is licensed and it's state regulated, right? And we have an ethics board and we have all this. You know, I don't know what it's, I don't know what happens for coaches. There's probably some really amazing certification programs and really amazing trainings. You know, I believe in coaches and sports. I think they're crucial, yeah. Right? So I think of, okay, maybe it's like that. It's someone helping you, right, get to the finish line, which is, I don't know, probably death for us because we're going to grieve forever. But like, if it's someone sitting there saying, like, let me hold space for you, this is forever. This is a marathon. Let's get you to a better space where you are eating and, you know, are sleeping and not wanting, you know, not thinking of suicide and feeling hopeful again. Obviously, I agree with, like, anyone doing that ethically. I think it's wonderful. I think the key point, right, is ethically. And I think part of ethics is not making false claims that someone is probably going to be done healing. At least not in my clinical experience. Mm-hmm. Have I ever heard like a trainer or an expert say like, this will be done at some point. People will probably debate me on that. But I think if you are saying like, hey, I'm doing grief coaching and I'm not going to save you from this. And this is right. This is like a lifelong process. Like, how can I help you ethically? Right. And refer when needed. I imagine it could be done. I haven't done it myself. So I don't quite know, but I try not to hate on coaches or anything like that because, you know, I know even state licenses and stuff, like there's some gatekeeping. It's tough to go for your bachelor's and then your master's and go get licensed to be a therapist. So maybe this realm makes it more accessible for support. But yeah, I just as long as everyone's being ethical, right? And being real about what healing is and what that end goal looks like. I'm hopeful it can be done.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hopeful too. I think I've seen a lot of people provide really good resources. I just like never know, like, what is the line? Just like, I don't know.
Yes, I'd be very curious, like, what kind of goals? Like, I know therapy goals. I know, like, what goals I come up with my therapy clients. Obviously, I'm a sex therapist, so I do more of sexual wellness work and stuff. But obviously grief comes up, any kind of anxiety comes up, we come up with goals. I'm not quite sure what those goals might look like with a coach, right? And I think therapist, coach, anybody, you know, are they realistic? You know, obviously doing anything for money and not being realistic might not be great. So yeah, I'm very curious to see what those programs are like. It's probably something I should know more about to even see if it's a referral option, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think I need to look more into like what it actually is. I just see a lot of it popping up now more. Me too. So I'm always like curious. Like what Me do too. You do?
Yeah, if you, whatever you find, send my way. Because I'm curious to the helpers. There's helpers everywhere and I'd love to know what they're doing and how they're doing it, right?
Yeah, because I mean, our tagline for our podcast is we're not professionals, but we're professional grievers. Yes. Like we're not therapists, but we're professionals like on our own grief and we're becoming more, yes, I'd say like sure of our grief in a way, like just confident how we speak of it. So that leads into the next question that we wanted to ask was like, how quickly after loss were you able to put that into words? And like, were you a writer before or did it just like the grief inspired you to write about it?
So I started writing like my little, I call them like my bite-sized poetry, my like minimalist poetry. I started writing probably just a few months, probably like that spring, like just a few months before my mom actually passed. And I was writing about feminism. I was writing about, you know, like dating, toxic dating, very like dark, intense. I was a sexual assault therapist at the time. So I was like sitting with survivors who were like tapping into so much bravery and so much pain. And it was during, you know, the 2016 election. There was a lot going on, I was working on a college campus and I started just writing little poems about it all, right? I just needed a place to put it. They were short. They were intense. When I posted them, everyone was reaching out asking if I was okay. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I'm like a therapist. I'm like fueling everything from the world right now. So it was not about like death loss. It was not about, I mean, obviously grief, but in all different ways, it was not like that. So it wasn't until she died. And I believe I started writing within 2 days of her dying. I started jotting things down in my phone. It was like the only way I could process. It was the only way I could. Everything else, if it was audible, I was crying. It was crying. It was screaming. It was nothing made sense, but I could type things into my notes app. And that's when it started. And I think so she passed in the middle of July. And I think by the very beginning of September, I had like published my first book. Like I wrote enough.
Oh, wow.
Some of it, half of it was all the other stuff, but half of it was all grief poetry. So it was like pouring out pretty quickly. And I just never stopped.
That's incredible that you were able to translate that. Because I wish that I wrote more journals back then. I wish in some sense I could read what I was thinking at the time, because I now think like it would really help a lot with our podcast stuff now. Because same thing, like Rachel and I are a couple years away from our losses. And so sometimes
more than a couple at this point.
Mentally, like
it feels like a couple. It feels like a couple days. Yeah.
It feels like yesterday. And then it's like, well, that's forever. Weird.
And then, and yesterday at the same time.
And so I'm amazed because like I was so exhausted I couldn't even like write anything to just journal out my thoughts. Because that's one thing they always recommend, right, when you're grieving is like, try journaling. And you're like, I would love to if I could get out of bed.
Yeah. If I could open my eyes, if they weren't swollen shut. Right. People always joke about Insta poets. And I've been compared to like so all the Insta poets and this isn't real poetry. And I'm like, I would love to see you with a shattered heart try to write more than two sentences. Like, let me see how you do it. I'd love to know how to do that. Like, I couldn't write a journal.
Yeah.
How could
you?
It was like two sentences, three sentences. I don't even know if they made sense. I mean, I published those books and I actually pulled them off the shelves because I'm like, these were intense. These were so intense. They weren't long poems, but they were so heavy. And yeah, it is great to look back on because I see how much I've changed. I see how much like my grief has evolved and how much it has transformed. But that was so dark and ugly. And that was such like an awful time. I just don't know how people are supposed to like read textbooks and journal long. Even in my therapy sessions, I could barely get anything out. My world was just crumbling, right? I was completely traumatized. Like, how are we supposed to use those parts of our brains? So I don't think you're alone.
How do you do anything with a shattered heart? Honestly, like it's
right.
It's so hard. And that's what I think about too. It's like, you have to do so much and your heart is just like broken. I'm missing both of my parents and my sister. I don't know how to fix like that. That's such a huge piece of me. It just shattered and there's nothing to fix it. There's nothing to replace that. Like I try to focus on like, how can I still live a good life and what can we do? And a big reason why we started the podcast is like, okay, we can help others by sharing our grief, but my heart is still shattered. Like my heart is still broken. And some days I feel it more than others. Like my mom and my sister died 10 days and less before my birthday. And my birthday's tomorrow. So there's a lot that goes on with that. And it's like, I was supposed to just be like living like a normal person and people don't get it. I'm like, it's hard. It's so
like
hard.
You're supposed to pay bills. You're supposed to like, still work. You're supposed to still care about eating. Like that's the part I'm like.
I just need a billionaire to adopt me.
Just like let you lay in bed and like feed you grapes because like that's what. That like this world is so harsh for grievers. We're so mean about it. Like we are so awful about it and so cold. And I'm like, for your loss, like you should have just been like, okay, you will never have to work again. We are going to like keep you in the comfiest bed. We are going to like feed you and nurture you and shampoo your hair and just like keep you alive. Right? Like in the most gentle way. And it's crazy to me that people are just like working the next day and like having to care about what's for dinner.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what?
It's such a crazy thing. So I'm like, I'm still trying to care. Like, where is my freaking medal?
Yes.
Make it all like we're choosing to be nice. I feel like you could easily choose to not be.
Experience something so cruel in life. Like cruelest things that can happen have happened to you. And to still choose to, like, be kind, I think it's huge. It's huge. And when people are not hurting like you and they're still not being kind,
yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, we preach so much about like suicide prevention and so much about mental health and so much about like, you should be here, stay alive. And then like we go no farther with it, right? What? Yeah. I don't know. I'm just as baffled as you. I really am.
I appreciate that you bring up that we do live in this like death phobic society and how much we, even as grievers, that we don't know about grief. And, you know, I had been dealing with my own grief for 4 years until I met Rachel. And we both have similar circumstances in that we lost our fathers in similar ways. But then learning about the different type of grief she's dealing with in regards to her sister. And that opened like the blinders off my eyes of like, all grief is not the same. And that even just the relationship that Rachel is dealing with that loss of her sister is something like I should be learning. I should know, because like the way Rachel needs like support and care is much different than the way she would need support and care around the loss of her parents. And we talk about this a lot, and that even the way we lose our people influences so much of our grief. And to talk about like the loss of your mom in such a traumatic way has such an influence on that. And like, that's something Rachel and I don't have like as much experience around, of like losing a parent in that type of way. And the feelings that's going to evoke is very different than Rachel and I losing our family members due to medical reasons. And so from your experience, like how have you, I don't know, like maybe experienced or like balanced that act of like, there's all these different types of relationships. There's all these different types of losses. And you, like you said, you've experienced not only the loss of your mom, but the loss of your niece as well. Like these are such different, like all different types of grief. And like you're trying to navigate through that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and even, right, like the way I experience, say, you know, the loss of my niece, like my other sister also lost her niece and might be experiencing it completely different. And then there's our baby sister who's right grieving her daughter. And her mom, she had two traumatic losses. So even like the minute I think I'm so close to someone and like we must be feeling it the same, I realize like we're not. And I don't know. I think before it was really easy to have like this hierarchy of loss, right? Like there's losing a grandparent and then there's losing a parent and those are natural and those are in order, right? And then like losing a sibling, well, we should still be 80 when that happens, right? And then like losing a child is like, no. We don't lose children, right? And then there's like pet loss. Like, yes, they don't live as long as humans do. It's still right. And I think it was so easy for society to like organize it in this way where there's like top to bottom, like one is bigger than the other. And I just, it's out the window. It's just like completely out the window. I'm like, I don't even care what people want to say about this. Like when you are sitting in my face and you say like, I lost my soul dog and I don't know how to go on. Like that is not my job to say like, you know, that's not a real loss, right? Yes, it is. Right. Or like a child versus a sibling versus a parent. There's so many different kinds of losses in so many different ways, right? Not all loss is traumatic, but a lot of it is, right? Traumatic grief and traumatic loss is, I mean, and that doesn't have to mean sudden, right? Medical, like, again, unless you were 105 years old sleeping in your bed and I got to say goodbye to you, I might be a little traumatized from that, right? Like that might be like a sudden goodbye, even if it lasted 3 years of someone like dying from a medical condition, right? Or watching someone with dementia and watching them like lose themselves, right? It's just, to me, I just, trauma is always there. There's some that's not, but it's often there with the people who are reaching out to me and the people I'm connecting with. Like a lot of times there's trauma there. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just like compassion for everybody. And maybe you experience a loss and it's the worst thing to ever happen. And then you experience an even worse loss and you're like, oh my gosh, that's not my job to try to like change that perspective for you on what's bigger, what's not. I don't know. I think it all hurts. I think it all does. Absolutely. And then you get cumulative grief, right? Like Rachel, for you, like,
yeah, too much,
too much. It's too much. I'm like, how much can a heart take?
Yeah.
Right. This is like five lifetimes worth of grief. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I navigate it great. I just write about all of it and I connect with people and I know there's people who have it worse and there's people who have it better. And I feel like we're all going to feel it at some point. right? And yeah, I don't know. I just try to hold as much space as I can for all of that.
And I feel like that's all you can do.
There's so many people that fight about their loss being the worst. Mm-hmm. And I've been in like a bunch of like Facebook support groups, and people always want to just like, it's so much worse losing your mom at like this age, like, kind of like mic drop. And
one up.
And they're like, I don't care what you say, blah, 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 blah. It's so much worse. And I'm just like, there's so many nuances with it. No one wins when someone dies. You know, there's no winner. It's all freaking sad. It's all hard. Whatever the circumstances are, it's hard. You don't want to be without your people. So it's like, why do we have to put it on a scale?
Yes.
You know, I don't ever try. Like, even when we started the podcast, Kendall was like, oh, well, you lost so many more people. I'm like, yeah, but you lost your dad. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, it's so much worse, you know, comparison. I think it's just very different in some ways. And in other ways, it's very similar because we both lost our dads. And it's like, I don't want to seem like, oh, I know more about grief. You know, I just like, I know different types of grief. But I see that and people post and I'm like, what prize do you want to get by yeah. saying that? By like hurting someone's feelings, by telling someone their loss isn't as worthy to be sad. I'm like, who are you to say that to somebody, no matter the circumstance? And I'm like, you lose people, you don't get them back. And figuring out how to live a life that you want to live, that's like worth living, that matters at all, that is a really hard task. And why would you then try to make someone feel worse about their loss is what I don't understand. And I see it so often. I'm like, why? Why are you spending time on that?
Right.
Just be sad.
Right. Like, everyone just support everybody. Like, everyone is hurting. Anyone that's in these groups, I'm like, you're hurting. I don't know what you're, you know, I don't know who you lost or how many people you've lost or if it was a human at all, right? And then there's ambiguous grief, there's anticipatory, right? There's all of these things.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, if we live in a world that is so cold with grief and it is so inaccessible to get support that we have to like rip each other down to like get in the front, right? And be like,
yeah,
front runner to have like, to be feel seen and heard. Like, that's also like a fault of our system. I'm like, that's like, we have failed if that's what it feels like we need to do to like tear someone down who's experienced pet loss, tear someone down who's experienced, you know, a parent dying at an old age or a grandparent, right? Tearing, you know, I got it too, right? I mean, your mom chose to, well, you know, my parent wanted to stay alive, or, you know, at least you got her to 55. Like, yes, I am both so lucky and also very unlucky. And okay, now it's awkward. Yeah. Right? Like, now where do we go from here? I don't know where we learn to have to compare like that, or why, if that's our only way that someone feels like they're going to be seen, is by like the one upping. And yeah, it like breaks my heart, because I'm like, you just stepped over and stepped on someone who like is really hurting, and this is very real and very big to them, and this might be the biggest pain they've ever felt in their entire life, right? And you just told them it's not as bad as they think, or it could be worse. And I don't find the help in that.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty in the communal space, especially online. Rachel does so much just in her free time trying to help people find community. I mean, that's where I saw like a huge mental shift for myself, was in the support group where I started deconstructing how I think society was telling me how to deal with my grief, and started just, oh, I can help my grief by being there for other people with their grief. And it's like, we can share that sadness together and someone else gets it. I'm not having to talk taboo questions or like laugh at dark jokes. It's like, at least in the support group, in the spaces that are pages online have helped, is people just being so kind to each other and being like, oh yeah, I get that. I've been there. Like, here's what's helped me. Maybe it'll help you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just seeing everyone like almost just like equal. Like, and that doesn't mean to ignore like obviously the nuances and the different levels. Like, I do think people need different types of care and different levels of support. And I know, right, it's obviously not everyone is like having the same symptoms of grief or whatever, but to just not have to compare it and just say like, I'm right there with you. And I remember not being able to eat, and I remember wanting to die. And I remember having no hope and just sitting there and dark humor and stuff, those are great. I'm so glad those spaces exist too. I know it's probably not this, but like, we need all of that. Hey, here's a space where you can have some dark humor. Oh, here's some space where it's people like laughing while grieving, and just all of, just anywhere where you can just feel seen and you just don't feel like you have to justify your pain is like, we need more of that.
One thing that I had a really hard time with at first was expressing my grief at all. Like, I definitely kept it very close, and I wasn't someone that shared my feelings at all about grief. And I didn't like admitting, like, if I was sad or like something was wrong, I was like very private about it. So with my grief, I definitely, and as it compounded, I was like, no one look at me, no one say anything to me, don't look at me with sad eyes, like, I don't want that. And so I had a really hard time sharing because I didn't want to feel like I was a sad sack, even though I was, like, and but I was a little bit of denial about it, because it's like, how did that even happen? You know, like, how does that even happen to my life? And so I definitely didn't share anything about it, and not publicly. I know when my dad first passed, because I had my mom and my sister, I still had such great support that I was like, I felt reflective. I was like, oh, I'm sharing stuff I learned about blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as it got worse, I just like shut down. Like, there was like no lessons to be learned. It was just like, I don't care. I'm going to eat my feelings. Like, you know, just went off the rails with that. And it took me forever until like this, like past year when we started the podcast and everything, to like actually feel comfortable sharing my feelings and being like, oh, if I'm sad, I'm sad. And if I cried, I cried. And just admitting out loud and just being like, I don't care. This is just the reality of grief. This is the reality of losing people, and it hurts, and it still hurts. So I was so hesitant to share anything publicly. At what point do you're like, oh, I'm writing, but then I want to share it? And like, how long did it take you to feel like you built like a strong community of people that really resonated with your poems?
Oh gosh, it's so scary to share that. So when I think when I first started sharing, and I like did my, you know, I had a little Instagram, I had, I don't know, 50 followers, and it was probably just like friends, family, and acquaintances, right? And I published this book. It was like, I don't know, I think I sold like 100 copies. So here, this book of like all this vulnerable stuff was now like in people's homes and on their shelves. And I was like, okay, that's so scary, but I'm also so numb that I don't think I like understood what that meant. That's really vulnerable stuff, right? Like, it's like forever sitting, you know, on someone's bookshelf. But I was so excited that I knew people had like my mom on their bookshelf, that I felt like I was like immortalizing her through a book. But that was different. Like, that was just like people who knew me, and maybe even knew my mom, right? I did not have strangers buying my book. I was just like on this little Instagram page. As it has grown, and it's not, I'm not an influencer. I'm not good at reels. I don't care about marketing. I'm like, apparently 90 years old and just don't know about, like, so bad with technology, and I want to be like this darn thing about my phone. So it darn has grown. Nabbit. Yeah, get off my lawn. Yeah, like, so it is scary. It is more scary now than it was before, because before, the only people who were accessing it were like people who loved me, and they didn't care if I was bad at poetry and if it wasn't good, and they didn't care if it was super intense. The internet is wild, and people are like really mean. And I see other kinds of posts, maybe not grief poetry, but I look at other posts, and like to see like the cyberbullying and all these things, I'm like, it's a very vulnerable space, and it is very scary. So it takes it, like, there's many days where I'm like, I'm going to shut it down. People are not bullying me. Like, they're really not. People are so kind, and they only message me nice things. And maybe there's been one or two comments that I was like, this sounds like a belligerent person. I have no idea what's going on. And I just like, I'll block all day. I don't care. I'm just like, see ya. But I don't have to do that. People are really great on this community. Like, I've gotten very lucky that as this community has built up, people have been really kind. If not, I don't know, I'm feisty. I'm really feisty. So I'm like, let's go. Message me something about my mom, I swear. Like, let's do it. So I don't know, maybe I'll have to practice that once that happens, about like how to be like a softer person when I'm facing cyberbullying, but right now I don't know. So that whole rant is just to say I've gotten very lucky with sharing and it's staying safe and the community being like really lovely, but in terms of like how it feels, like I am afraid like every time I post because like we said, imposter syndrome is real. I do not consider myself a real writer. I don't consider myself a poet. You know, I read poetry every single day on Instagram. I'm always reading poetry. I'm buying books, all that. And I'm in awe of how people write. And I'm like, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve 10 followers. This isn't real. This is a journal entry. This is a thought. This isn't poetry. All these thoughts. And like, people have been wonderful. And it has been so nice to like connect and be vulnerable. But like, no, basically, yeah, it's terrifying. And it's really scary. I don't know. Maybe that's just because I'm like a really sensitive person. And I'm very protective of my mom. I'm very protective of my grief. I'm very protective of other people's grief. So I don't know. I think every time I post, I think someone's going to come on here and try to invalidate this. And like, all right, cool. I can take that. I can be feisty and I'll argue all day or I'll shut someone down. But like someone else just read that. And what if they took that in? What if like that just broke their heart to read that? So I don't know. It's to be determined, I guess, on like how this goes. I don't know. This could like blow up. I have no idea. I never even knew it would be where it is right now, to be honest. I don't know how I got here.
Well, I definitely think you're helping a lot of people with your words. And me and Kendall are big readers. And even right now we're reading Divine Rivals. And I told Kendall, like, reading this book previously was something that helped me shift the way that I thought about it. Like, I felt like I almost got called out in the way that she wrote about grief and the way that she was saying, like, you hide yourself behind like a shield and don't let people see you and you don't want to connect with people because you're sad and you lost people and you don't want to lose any more people. And I think there's such power in words. And I feel like when I read your poems, I see that too. Very powerful ways that you just reaffirm what you're thinking. Because even before I lost people, I used to see loss as like, oh, you lose someone and then you get over it. Because that's how I saw other people do it in my head because we didn't talk about it.
Right.
So in my head, you're over it because now you're back at work. You're doing your things. You're showing up at parties. It's not an obvious like depression or anything. So in my head, you're over it. But it's not that you're over it. It's just that we don't have spaces to then continue to talk about it. People stop asking about it. You just assume that you're fine. And when I actually thought about it, I'm like, how can you ever get over losing somebody? You can't. You don't ever get over it. And I was like, I didn't think about it that way. I just thought like, that's what happens. And so I think reading how people write about grief and even talking about grief, I think is so important because I think it validates things that we're told that are wrong. And it gives you the courage to like feel confident in like, you are wrong and this is how I feel and I'm okay with that. And I think that's like so powerful with what you're doing and what you're writing is that it's helping people do that. And even in our support group was a great like, what do you call it? Test group or something like that. They brought it up organically. We didn't say that we were going to talk to you.
You didn't
they
make
brought
a plug. It up.
Yeah, we didn't make a plug to be like, well, maybe we'll get her on or something. Like it was nothing like that. They just brought it up and it was just because of another grief connection we had that we have the cards and then it just like came up. So you're definitely helping a lot of people with your words. So
thank you
are a true poet.
Well,
for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm on the journey of just like embracing that. If I don't, then other people are reading their poems and saying, well, she's not, then what am I? If she keeps saying she's not a writer and this isn't real, then like, what am I writing? Or what am I saying? What about even just like content creators? Like, well, if that's not real, if that's not helpful, or if that feels pointless, then like, what does it say about what I'm sharing today? So like, I want to eliminate that. I want like the gates to be open. And like, again, like it cannot be a realm that's oversaturated. You can't talk about grief enough. We have like years and years and decades of catching up to do around creating space for grief, right? And creating like dialogue around it that I'm like, I don't want to talk badly about my writing or downplay it or, you know, people who are creating podcasts, downplaying their podcast. We don't want anyone downplaying because it's like paving ways for other people to create these spaces and start sharing.
Yeah.
And so no, I appreciate that. Yeah. It's scary. It's vulnerable. You're putting yourself out there and you know, I think the whole point is like, can we find ways to do that where like the reward outweighs the risk, right? And I think right now, like I get to share about my mom, but I get to connect with people and I get like people get to feel seen and heard. And obviously, like I'm a therapist, that's like in me. Obviously, that's what like I care about that. So this was a way where like two of my worlds merged where I'm like, oh, I get to help people and I get to like talk about my mom and how amazing she was and how missed she was. And I get to talk about mental health and suicide prevention and poetry. Like it's just, yeah, I hope more and more and more people come forward and create spaces. I would love to see it everywhere.
Yeah, to caveat all that, to add some context to that as well. Like if Mary Oliver and Walt Whitman had social media, they would be putting their poems on Instagram. So like, don't be comparing our mediums of communication into something of the past, because they certainly would. Like, you're not telling me Walt Whitman wouldn't. He totally would. Like,
yes. And oh like, my gosh.
If you read a Mary Oliver poem, I would easily have read this on Instagram. Like, this is just as comprehensible. I think like people like to pretentious. People like to be like, well, it's short. And so that's why it's on so Instagram and it's not as good because it's on social media and it's short. And it's like, but you read a short poem and Mary Oliver's on a page. It's just as impactful, but it's the same length. Yeah. Like, I don't know what's to be compared. One is like on a digital medium and one is on paper. Like, I don't understand.
It is. It's a weird, I mean, you all being like book readers, I'm sure you're not just reading like short poems. I'm sure you're not just reading like micro poetry or contemporary. You're reading like other books, right? Thicker books, more pages, right? More, you know, not just like poems, but I'm like, I always say this, like I couldn't read anything else. I could not, just like I couldn't write anything else. I couldn't take anything else in up until probably a few years ago about grief. Like I could not sit and take in like the stages. I didn't want the neurobiology of grief. Like I was a nerdy therapist who loved reading all that stuff. I couldn't take it in. I couldn't do it. I could only take in bite-sized poems. And to me, I'm like, two sentences have knocked me on my butt more than 100 pages before, right? And that's why I keep writing and saying that there's nothing wrong with them being I'm 5'1", I'm short, and I pack a lot of punch, all right? And that doesn't make me any less of like an interesting person. Just like, it's just smaller. Just smaller. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I could not read, and I still can't. I mean, I've bought some books that are like, this is how grief works, or this is the stages of grief. I have a bunch of books, and I cannot read them. I cannot sit through it, because I feel like, at the end of the day, I just feel like my grief still feels very different. It feels like it doesn't align with my brain of how I'm processing, and I'm very reflective with my grief. But I do love, and most of our books are fiction, some are memoirs. I choose fiction for the most part. But I like reading grief where there's some happy endings in there, or like happiness or some magic or something. Kendall leans more into like the deeper themes, like memoirs.
Cemetery.
Like that's how different. Like I brought a beach read and Kendall was like testing like, should we have Pet Cemetery on? So we're like very different directions with our grief. But it's a good balance. And she actually made me rethink how I even think of Pet Cemetery, because I've only watched the movie. I've never read the book. But I was like, I know that I hid for half of the movie. But if I think about it and kind of like paring it down, that book is desperation of parents that lost their kid and are going to the extreme. And then it goes into this whole dark place. But I can see where that makes sense, and it is really griefy. Because when she said it, I was like, is it griefy? It's just kind of scary. But I'm like, no, it is. And when we talked about it, I was like, that makes sense. It is very griefy, because when you lose somebody, you just want them back. And you think, like, if I could bury them and they'd come back in the special cemetery, would you do it? Yeah. And it's way deeper than I gave it credit for as someone that watched it like 20 years ago and just hid. But when I look back, I'm like, okay, I get it. That makes sense. So she makes
you right. When you really look at that, I have not read the book. I love Stephen King, but I love horror movies. And that is one that like that movie, like not the new one, I'd have seen it, but the original one, like I would just like cry. It was like that immediately hit like my grief, like my heartstrings. Like that, like, that desperation. Obviously, it gets, like, spooky, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens and all that, but, like, that, like, how it starts, I'm like, it is, it's heavy. It is, like, grief. It, yeah, that desperation. I'm like, you even see it now with, like, folks using AI. I'm like, people just doing anything they can to hear someone's, like, voice again, to watch pictures move and make videos, like, holographs. I mean, like, all of these things, right, that you can just see, like, we are dying for, like, another moment of someone being alive, right? And that movie, like, I mean, that book, that movie, that, like, really captures, like, how desperate we could get to, like, have somebody alive again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a moment I had this clear thought shortly after my dad passed, where before him passing, I realized what a privilege it was to ask myself, if I wanted anything in the world, what would that be? And, like, those aspirations be like, oh, this dream job, or to, like, have this type of house. And then after him passing, it was like, I would have done anything in my power to just have 5 minutes with him on a bench and just give him a hug. Not even say anything, but just to have that 5 minutes. Like, I realized there is a capacity in me that I would do so much just to bring him back. And I think that's a very relatable feeling for many grievers, to be like, wow, what I want in life has now changed. But the thing is, it's never attainable. It's never something that can be reached. And so, fortunately, through much therapy, through much work on myself, it became like I have those personal aspirations again. And now just be like, well, something I wish that could happen, but not something I know, like, that capacity is within me anymore.
That, like, fantasy.
Yeah.
Right, is, I'm like, probably kept me alive, right? To just even have a moment to sit and think, like, what would I say?
Yeah.
What would I say to her? Mm-hmm. What would I do different? I'm like, I know people are like, oh, that's a symptom of grief. And, you know, that's trauma and stuff. And I'm like, and it also was like a place I feel like my mind could go just to, like, feel hope again when I didn't have it.
Yeah.
Right. Would just to picture them. You know, I did another podcast a couple months ago, and at the very end, she said, like, if you could say, like, I did not know the question was coming, but, like, if you could say anything to your mom, if she was sitting across the table, like, what would you say? And I just started crying. Just, like, started bawling. And I was like, I am so sorry. How embarrassing for me. And I like that, right? Like, that's all I dreamed about for years. I mean, right? Like, I still dream about that. And it, like, just, like, knocked me down, right? Because, and not in a bad way, like, that I appreciated that question so much, because I'm like, no one's ever asked. I've always just fantasized about it, right? And it's like, eventually you still think about that, but you also find other ways to, like, access hope, right? Like, I ended up getting married, and, you know, my mom doesn't know my husband, and she's never met my two babies, but she really wanted me to have kids, and she was really excited if I was going to have daughters, and I had two. And it's like that. Mm-hmm. It's a weird space to be in, where I'm like, I have all of this. I have so much. Like, I'm so lucky. And also, like, oh, and there's also times where, like, I would trade it to have a moment with her. And then it's like that weird guilt of, like, what do you do when your life is, like, torn in two? Like, I would never trade my babies, but gosh, I still am, like, a kid who misses her mom, her first love, right? So much that it's like a weird space, and I'll never have the other one. So I, like, don't actually have to worry about that. But, like, how can we not think about that, right? How do we not think about, like, what you would do if you could, what you would do to get a moment with them again? Right. I don't know. I think that's just so normal. It's like a part of this.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't even know, when you said that, I was like, I don't know even what I would do. I feel like I'd be so, like, freaked out, like, oh my God, what do I need in this time? And probably just a hug. I don't know. Like, just for that moment. And I think that's very real. Like, obviously, I think it's different if, like, that's all you focus on. But I think it's okay to dream about that. Okay to want that, to wish that was a reality. I don't think that's, like, a bad thing, because we miss them. Like, I think it's fine to wish that you would be able to speak to them, if those are the people that you like to speak to the most. It's like, of course, I'd first like to have that conversation with them above anybody else for anything. So.
Yeah. And then learning how to, like, I don't know. I still talk to my mom. I talk to her urn. I talk out loud. I talk to the sky, and I'm like, I know you're not sitting in front of me in like the body that you used to, right? The vessel that like I loved and I held and, you know, I came from, like, I know that, but to like find ways to still have conversations like that, that took a minute, right? To get comfortable doing that. And some people think it's crazy and some people like obviously don't. Some people believe like you're gone and you're gone. You're not talking to them and that's okay. But like that kept me afloat. If you can't be here ever again, if I'm never going to hold you again, I'm going to talk to you and maybe you can hear me. Maybe that's somehow reaching you and I don't know, but I don't know. I'm going to do it just because I could be wrong that about anything. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to the full moon because my dad died under a full moon. And so it's a little weird, but I'm like,
not weird.
The channels of communication are open.
Yes. Like, I'm not burying anyone in a pet cemetery. Like, let me talk to an urn, yeah. Okay? This isn't even that bad. Like, let me talk to the full moon, okay?
Yeah. I put in prayers or, like, when I say something, it's, like, I say it to, like, my mom, my sister, my dad, or, like, God. I just, like, throw it out there. Whoever can help me. Whatever, wherever you are, one of you, help me.
Anybody.
Anybody. Anybody.
Anyone. Yep. Same. I'm just, like, okay, anyone. I don't know. I'm so not wasting that much breath.
We would love to touch on, you have 5 books out right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
In which, and correct me if I'm wrong, 4 of them are like your poetry and then 1 of them is a children's book?
So yes, so I have a children's book that is, it's pretty specific. My mama has a mama too, and that was mostly written for my daughter when my firstborn, so I could have a way to tell her about her grandma who she never got to meet. And I wanted there to be a way to say the word death. I want to actually say the word dying because I don't want euphemisms. I don't want to say pass away. I'm very much like, I want to educate my children about what like life and death is. You know, the therapist in me is like, hey, research shows we should be, you know, we should be more direct and that can help with fear and all that. So I created that as more of like a personal tool, but I just published it in case that could help with any, you know, help others. And then, yes, the rest are poetry books.
So they all have really beautiful names. And I think I have them written down here. When Death Came, Find Me There, Loving the Gone, We Are Carried, and When Bones Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, like, do they have themes around them versus like with each other? Like, do they cover specific topics? Kind of more so if there's a listener out there curious on purchasing a book, which one they might want to purchase, or should they purchase all of them? Obviously, we're giving you like this plug, but trying to see if a listener's out there, if like what type of book in your collection should they look into getting?
Yes. Okay. So, So yes, out of the, and I don't even know what number we said before. So there's 5 poetry books, 1 children's book. So When Bones Bloom, half of that is grief. You might be able to tell a little bit that it's parent loss. There might be 1 or 2 that you could tell it's like suicide loss. So half is grief. And then the other half is actually like, I wrote that while I was falling in love with my now husband. We dated and we were 11. We graduated together. We did not date from 11. We dated at 11 for 2 weeks. We came together just a couple months after we kind of like reunited a couple months after my mom passed. And I started writing poems about falling in love with him and trying to start this like new chapter while grieving her and her not being there for it. So half of When Bones Bloom is also about like kind of love poems, kind of falling in love, moving forward without, in my case, a parent, but while grieving. Then it moves into We Are Carried. Again, half about grief. And the other half is I wrote that while I was pregnant with my daughter, my firstborn, and getting married. So it was a lot about like this idea of like birth and death and how crazy it was that I was like grieving death loss while like welcoming a life and like the merging of those two worlds. So that one's great for grief too, because again, half of it's grief. I do say, hey, you know, if you are experiencing like pregnancy loss or child loss, that one might be a little bit more triggering just because it's talking about birth. So I do like to let people know when they reach out to me about that one. And then the other ones, Then Death Came, Loving the Gone and Find Me There, those are 100% grief poetry. Same style, short poems, but all grief. Grief is the entire theme. It's all broad loss. So that one is not parent loss. That's not suicide loss, nothing. That's just like very broad, all grief, death loss poetry.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
So just curious, when you write the poems, do you write it from just like a griever's lens, or do you write it through like the therapist griever's lens?
Griever's lens. I actually like, sometimes I worry that I'm in such like griever hat that I'm like, if one of my clients ever sees this, they're going to think I'm like not okay to be therapist. Are we, what if they think I'm crying all the time and I can't handle like my caseload? No. So it's very much like griever's lens. I try not to wear my therapy hat at all there, just because I don't know. That's just like Sarah Ryan. That's my, you know, my writer name. That's my middle name, is very different than like me as a therapist. I'm obviously sitting in that room with my clients with this like background in grief, but it just feels so different. That page feels very much like I'm a griever here with you. Not that I don't want to be a helper, because I want to connect and stuff, but I don't want to be a helper in like the capacity of therapist. So they actually do feel quite separate to me.
And for those who are following you on your accounts, reading your art, do you have advice for grievers who are in a similar situation as you were and trying to express that grief through poetry, or if not poetry, other forms of artistic expression?
Yes. Yes. If I had to give any advice, like if you are looking to, and like if you are already, or you are starting to express yourself through some kind of like creative medium or like some kind of art, just do it. I know it's scary. You don't have to share it. Like you don't. I say, like, if you wrote something down, if you jotted something down in your notes app, like, awesome, you're a poet. You don't have to be published. You don't need 100. You don't need to submit it to a magazine. You don't need to have it in a museum. It doesn't need to be, you know, like a live song on Spotify. Whatever you're doing, write it down, paint it, whatever. Just like make it real, even if no one sees it. And then, like, who knows where that could go? Maybe you do reach a place like I did where I was like, I think I want to share this, right? Like Rachel, you were saying, like, oh yeah, I think eventually I was ready to share. And I think that became like a part of my healing. So kind of like Kendall, how you said, like, I wish I would have maybe like had more journals. Obviously don't force yourself to produce something. You're not here to produce from your grief. That's like, I think capitalist society does that enough. Like we don't need to make and make and make and consume and consume, right? But if it's coming out, like get it out there, put it down, make it real, even if no one sees it and may never see it, just like get it out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
So we always like to ask this question because everyone's answers are kind of different. And this is something that people fight a lot about. It's just what like tips, or how do you think people should support other grievers? Or like, what is your go-to way to like support a griever?
Don't judge. We listen, we don't judge. Like we talked about, do not try to compare. Do not try to like one up. Don't like let the hierarchy go. Any stages, like whatever you think, like judges out the window. And my biggest thing would be like, don't forget, even though like the funeral is ended, just like, don't forget to bring up their person, like just still buy cards, still acknowledge birthdays, still acknowledge death anniversaries, and just like still talk about them and what, or ask them if you never got to meet that person, like still ask about them. I do that to everyone. It's probably so annoying to anyone around me that's grieving, where I'm like, oh, I thought about your dad, or thinking, you know, whatever. I had a dream about them. Like I'm constantly just like, and to me, like they're still alive. So like I'm bringing them up all the time. And when people do that about my mom, it just means so much to me. It just means so much. So I think that would be just like no judgments, even if you don't know what to say, like, I don't know, just please don't judge. And then if you do feel like you have some bravery to like talk about them or ask about their person long after the funeral, years later, like please, please do.
Those are beautiful and I think super tangible for people who may not know how to support grievers.
I know that's probably like everyone. If you ask everyone on this podcast, I know they're probably answering similar, but hopefully that's good because it hopefully will reinforce that message. So yeah. I don't care if I copied somebody.
I don't think it's been exactly the same. And even in our grief support group, we're like, people are saying that they wish the friend did this or that. And then mm-hmm. we're like, oh, well, what do you need? And what would you do for someone else? Like, what is the perfect way? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, well, we don't know. We kind of need to, I just feel like it's a hard thing because it's just a weird experience. Absolutely. And I think there needs to be like a little bit of leeway of how people try to support. It's not always like, I think when you're that sad, you might not see it as support or someone trying, you know, but it's a delicate situation. And I think sometimes, you know, there can be some wires crossed when it's just trying to be a kind gesture and it comes off wrong, but it doesn't need to be like a big thing. You know, if someone's trying, I think that should get some kudos because a lot of people just don't even try.
Absolutely. Like taking the risk, knowing
yeah.
how sensitive the topic is, taking a risk to say like, I'm going to show up in this way and I don't know exactly how it's going to land, but like trying to show up and say like, I care. I think you can absolutely tell the difference between that versus someone who's like judging, criticizing, you know, like I just, there's a different feel like doing something out of like a risk, but trying to show up just seems so different than when people are trying to like rush you or minimize your grief or like shut it down or ignore it. It feels so different. You can tell when someone's trying to show up, even if it doesn't land exactly right, like what they're yeah. doing. I think you can see when someone's trying.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. That's what Rachel and I say is just like, even if it doesn't come off the way you hope, you can always go back and communicate that and clarify it. But the first step is you have to show up.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yes.
Do you have any last words that you would like to impart on our listeners? Any thoughts or anything that came up in the discussion or anything that you're thinking about recently that you think listeners might enjoy or hear?
Any mic drops?
I was going to say, no, gosh, I wish I had something like really cool to sign off on, like a punchline or one-liner or something. No, I'm so glad. Whoever's listening, I'm glad you're here. And I hope you keep listening because these ladies are awesome. So
thank you.
I just thank you for letting me be here. You guys are just wonderful.
We've had so much fun. And it's always interesting to like read people's words and then like actually talk to them or like see something they do. You know, you always picture like what it's going to be like. It's been a nice thing that everyone that we've been talking to is like better in person. Yeah. It's like better when we got to talk to them. Yes.
Yes, because you just don't know, especially like some people, like their faces aren't on their pages, yeah. right? And you're just getting like their poems or I'm like, if someone only reads that and like, I'm like, you probably like think I'm just like a Johnny Rain cloud floating around, just like crying at all times or like someone's like, hey, and I'm like, you know, people die.
Yeah.
Obviously there's so much more to people than these like pages and these, you know, profiles and all that. So it's so nice when people can just having spaces like this where people can come on. It's like, yeah, I'm a mess, but I promise I'm not only talking about like death and dying all day. Right. I'm like,
yeah,
it's cool to talk and be like, oh, actually in my real life, I talk about sex. I'm a sex therapist. So like, it's funny, you know, how like people only get like one corner of your life on these profiles. And
yeah,
it's really cool when you get to see like the whole person.
Yeah. Definitely. So where can people find you? And do you have any like new books coming out or any exciting projects coming out?
Okay. So I have sarahryanbooks.com is my website. You can find me on Instagram. I have a Facebook I finally made. I'm trying to do the things. I'm trying to do the tech things. I just started like a newsletter like 3 days ago. So I'm now on like Substack. Nice. I do not have any, most likely there will be another book. Like, let's be honest. I can say like, oh, I don't know, but I'm sure there's going to be enough poems that I have written that will come together. So I try to at least publish one book a year. Last year I had two. So
very
it might
year.
Be a little, yeah, I was like, I was just grieving left and right apparently. So 2025, hopefully there's something, you know, I'll post on my page when I get an idea of like when that might be. It kind of just, it's when I feel like it's ready, when I'm like, oh, I feel like I have a good collection here. And I usually throw it together in like 7 days and publish it in a very sloppy way. So sorry for any typos that you see. I don't have an editor or anyone that watches me and oversees what I do. So yeah, find me on any of those. It's me. I don't have anyone that works for me or anything. So if you message me, it's me. And when you post and I like it, it's me. So
Well, hopefully I love we can that connect. You also have on your website, like, you can purchase your books on Amazon, but you also have like a request button. People can request an autographed copy. And I was mm-hmm. like, that is such a cool like method. Someone was grieving and I knew they really liked literature. I would totally be like, hey, I got you this book as like a gift. Hopefully it helps kind of like begin to reckon with these feelings. But I was like, how yes. sweet to offer an autographed copy.
Yes, I love them. So obviously, like, I self-publish through Amazon. So they do the printing, they do the distributing. I get my own copies. And then if anyone would like them signed, but most of the time they want them signed with a message. So if you want me to write them in honor of someone, that's what I mostly get is like, I can dedicate this to someone, write in honor. It's a gift. A lot of times people just give me freedom to write whatever I want. So I sell some poem prints on there you can request through me. And then also, yeah, signed books or personalized message books. I have that. And I know that everyone uses Amazon and also it doesn't distribute everywhere. So I just try to make it as accessible as possible. And I created, I put them into like Kindle books as well, just to make sure any like visually impaired folks that can't access like direct, you know, paperbacks. I'm just trying to make sure it's as accessible as possible. So if you don't use Amazon, I can mail copies directly too.
Love that. You are incredible.
You're sweet. Thank you. My honor. My pleasure.
And we'll go brag to our grief support group now.
Just let them know I'm not like an actual celebrity, please. Yeah. I love when people are like, I'm fangirling. I'm like, you don't need to. I swear. I'm just like super normal. And yeah, you're probably like way cooler than I am. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah.